Hi, this is News Director Larissa Donovan, and joining me on the phone is incumbent Senator for Minnesota's District 2, Paul Utke. How's it going today?
Going very well.
Well, that's so great to hear. So I know you ran last time in 2016, too, but maybe for those who may not know you, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, such as how long you've lived in the area?
Okay. Start with, my wife and I have been in the area, and actually we live in Park Rapids for 27 years. We moved here in 1993 with our two, at that point, young daughters, just getting ready to start school. And of course, now with that many years, they're off and working, one in Fargo, North Dakota, and the other in Nashville, Tennessee.
All right. And was your Senate campaign in 2016 your first political campaign, or have you had prior experience?
It was my first state office campaign here in District 2. I had served 7 years prior to that on the Park Rapids City Council. But that was a position where I filled a vacancy, so I just sent a letter and applied for it and got selected by the council at that time, and then ran two re-elections unopposed. So this was truly a first going through a full election cycle 4 years ago.
All right. And what other roles in your community have you served?
Well, I guess the list is probably quite lengthy, like most people in your small towns.
Wear a lot of hats, huh?
Yeah, I was in the retail business for 16 years. We owned a hardware and equipment rental store, so that gets you involved. And we were on Main Street in Park Rapids, so you got involved in a downtown business association. I had, been chair of a year or two of the Park Rapids Chamber. And then you get into the fundraising side. You just name it, whatever comes up when you're involved in a small town, you get to be part of it, which is great. You work with a lot of good people, and it's what keeps our little towns viable and growing and going.
All right. Well, so over your Senate tenure here in Minnesota, what are some of your proudest accomplishments over the last 4 years?
Oh, that's that's a tough one because, I've enjoyed all 4 years and been involved in just a lot of different things. I guess just to give people an idea where and what I get involved in, I'm vice chair of the Human Services Committee and of course this is in our Senate. I'm also on the Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee, the Jobs and Economic Growth Committee, and for 2 years I was on the E12 Education Policy Committee. After 2 years, they combined our finance and policy committees, and then it was put at the same time as Human Services, so I had to give up one. And I'm also involved with the Work Comp Advisory Council statewide, and I'm vice chair of the Work Comp Committee on the National Coalition of Insurance Legislators, a national organization. So when it comes to bills and such, a big part of what I do is human services-related issues. Human services in our state handles, their budget is basically about $38 billion for the two-year biennium. That's state and federal monies. So we work with family issues, basically, from conception to natural death. So I've played a part, carried a lot of bills that help out our disability community, those providing the day services, our residential providers, to our social services, whether it all over the state, mental health, working with the tribes. I've got two reservations in the district with White Earth and Red Lake. I've had, a number of interactions there, whether it's out-of-home placements or, the various levels of social service. And I enjoy anything related to insurance, so I get a lot of those bills. It's if variety is the spice of life, I'm having a good time because there's quite the variety.
I imagine. And what are some of your goals? What have you set your sights on for goals if you get reelected again?
You know, I've got a number of bills that we've either been working on or kind of even in the mill right now, getting ready for 2021. You know, the biggest goal is going to be, and it's not really such a goal, but it's going to be a task, and in a way I look forward to it, is, you know, we're going through some tough times right now with our economy because of the coronavirus. Back in February, we had a sizable budget surplus. Now we're looking at a sizable, if not a large, budget deficit. And I just basically eager to roll up the sleeves and go to work and make that budget come out again. You know, in the last few years, maybe it was a little too easy for everybody to try to get their piece of the action, and spending did increase, even though taxes didn't, because the economy was growing. We need to get serious this coming year and get our state in line with what's been going on. And I look at it as a challenge, but I also think it's needed. So that's kind of the main thing. And beyond that, we're going to have policy issues that we need to address. They're ever-changing, and we have to keep up with times.
So what are some of the key issues your constituents have discussed with you along the campaign trail?
You know, it's a wide variety. You get people that contact you just for their specific issue. They may have a property issue, maybe something to do with even something related to the lakes, you name it. Then you get some stuff that's a little broader. One that's we've been working, you know, there's been a conversation since early this spring. It's come up again, is the border crossing. This district includes the northwest angle. And of course, to go from Minnesota to Minnesota, you got to go through Canada, which created a challenge for our resort owners early this spring, even just getting up to their property, because they happen to have addresses either in mainland Minnesota or other states nearby. But to get to their business, they couldn't cross Canada. And so some of those things did get resolved. But currently, we're trying to work on something there for our resorts and such in the northwest angle, because they're running at about probably 10% of their normal business income, which we know that will not allow anybody to survive. So that's one of the things. Child care being extremely huge, yet it's still a driving issue. It's probably our biggest economic issue in the state. If we talk about jobs and all these other things, right side by side is child care, because we can't grow jobs or we can't fill businesses with the employees they need until we have child care to take care of those needs for our young families. You know, and then we've got you know, something that did just get taken care of, not completely, but it helped, was monies for our daycare provide or day service providers, those working with the disabled that have different, you know, all those that maybe need a little help, to those that are needing a lot of help, but they were not getting the money they needed from the state through the CARES Act money. And that did get resolved somewhat here in August. And then finally, line three is always a big issue.
All right. So my next question is a bit open-ended, so take all the time you need. But what sort of values do you have that guide you in your decision-making?
Oh, okay.
A little philosophical for you.
Yeah. I guess, you know, the first thing is I've always, I think, been a people person. I like being with people and the respect part of it. I just treat others as you would want to be treated yourself. Giving them, you know, the respect they deserve, no matter what the issue is. I'm always a big fan of, you know, we're going to come together with different ideals, whether it's around a boardroom table or just on the street one-to-one, but we can have a respectful conversation, express our various opinions, and hopefully, you know, understand each other better in the end. And so I look at just that respect part. You know, this is a position of service, so it's our obligation to take in all sides. In the end, we only get one vote, and I try to remind people of that. Politics is a crazy game. If you have 60% of anything in politics, that's an overwhelming majority. 60% grade in your school test is a failure, so they just have to separate politics from the rest of it. You know, a big thing is I believe in and the service to our God. You know, it kind of starts at home. We need to have a solid base and something to look up to and be proud of. And then, you know, the rest of what I follow is, you know, follow our Constitution, both federal and state. We have to have that core base to work from. And I think after that, everything else is possible and, you know, a lot more minor once we get kind of the basics out of the way.
All right. Well, my last question is on COVID-19 response. What are your thoughts on what's been happening in the state so far, and what do you think should be done moving forward?
Well, how many hours do we have?
But, well, I got another call coming up quickly, though. But
no, you know, this COVID, and I mean, it's everybody talks about it. You know, I had the opportunity right before the state shut down to, I was out in North Carolina for a meeting. We had the head of public health from South Carolina that was at our meeting because it was insurance related. And so I've talked with and heard from experts from then the East Coast back to Minnesota and around. I think this COVID thing, you know, we know anytime anybody's going to get sick or we're going to have a loss of life, it's serious and we don't want to lose anybody. But I'm afraid it's overblown somewhat, and particularly the length of it up front. It had to be addressed. You got to have a plan and you got to let people know how you're going to carry out that plan and what you're hoping to have as a result. Currently, we're dealing a lot with these executive orders from our governor. I am one that has been of the opinion and, you know, voted the last 3 months to say that those should have ended quite a while ago. The peacetime emergency is something that's there for the exact reason it spells out. It's an emergency. You know, we happened to be in session during that time it was declared, so we could have, the governor and the legislature could have worked together right from the beginning, but he did his emergency, but at that point, then we need to work together. But that's not the way the current statute or law is set up. As long as he and his team can keep approving it, and you know, it's creating a stress on our population just because of the, you know, you talk about a division, and that is it, because we've got people that have strong opinions on both sides, and hopefully we can pull that together. I truly believe and fully support ending these emergency powers at this point and getting the legislature back in and engaged. You know, the bottom line is we need to protect our vulnerable, of which we have to a certain degree. There's been some failure by putting the sick back in with the healthy. But we're social creatures, and I truly believe that many of those in these long-term care facilities that have been dying are not all dying because of COVID. We know that death certificates and such are not being filled out correctly. And the fact that we are social, when we shut off their visitors, they couldn't go eat together. I'm afraid some of those people, you know, didn't pass away because of the illness. we're just not meant to be caged up like that. So, you know, we're hoping for better things going forward, and hopefully we get through this fairly fast. I mean, you look back at the H1N1 back in the 2008-2009 era, it had a lot more deaths. It was did a lot more damage to our population than this has even come close to. We didn't shut down the economy. You know, we need to help those that are vulnerable and have health issues, but we need to keep the healthy working and keep our economy rolling. So, you know, it's created a lot of issues, and hopefully it's soon to have better times ahead.
All right, great. Well, I just have one more question. Child care is becoming incredibly difficult to find in this area, as I'm sure you know, especially for infants. What are your ideas on how to address access to child care?
Well, actually, I had a bill this last year that the child care providers, and you're calling me from the Bemidji area.
Yeah.
It was the Beltrami County Child Care Group. Very active group. They do a lot of good work. They had a lot of meetings with their providers, and so we crafted some language from their suggestions. And of course, with this year being such a shortened year, basically, we had the same amount of time, but yet after that first month of session, everything kind of got scrambled, and a lot of people working from home and all over the state. We had a bill that I really liked, and it just opens up the flexibility. Of course, is the in-home child care, which is the vast majority of all our providers throughout mm-hmm. our district here. We have very few center-based, but we needed to open up and give them flexibility in the numbers of or the age groups of the children that they had, because particularly when you mention infants and such, they are so restricted. And you watch currently how they move through the system. Everything is by age. And you, 1 month you might be good, and the next month you're not, because the kids, of course, we all get older every day.
Yeah.
And it makes it really, really hard to work with that. So the big thing is opening up the regulations on child care, basically changing some and eliminating some, because these people that are doing this child care, and they're mostly women, they're doing a wonderful job. And they're not doing it for the money, because they don't make enough doing it. They're doing it from the goodness of their heart. They probably started out when they had their own children, but a lot of these have kept on for their whole working life. And, I mean, the service that they're doing for us as people that have needed them in the past, it's incredible. And we just have to make their life easier. You know, there's going to be some oversight, but we need to get that oversight to a point where they're comfortable. And we're losing way too many of them. And we need to make sure that we retain those that are currently in child care and make it attractive for some new ones to start. Because without child care, our job, you know, employers and such, they're struggling. I've had a number of manufacturers say they would have expanded in Minnesota or will expand in Minnesota if we get child care taken care of. But without it, they can't hire enough employees. And we have a lot of young parents that one of them has to stay home because of the child care issue that would like to be in the workforce. So it's been a big deal for the 4 years that I've been in St. Paul so far. We have made some changes which have helped, but we need to make a lot more changes or make some drastic changes to make it better, faster.
All right. Well, that takes care of all my questions. Thanks so much for taking the time to respond to them, Senator Etke, Paul Etke for Minnesota Senate District 2.